This is WordPress Weekly, your source for the latest news, plugins, and interviews with influential leaders in the WordPress community. Here's your hosts, Jeff Chandler and Marcus Couch.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 192 of WordPress Weekly for Wednesday, May 13th, 2015. I'm your host, Jeff Chandler, joined by Marcus Couch, whose Chicago Bulls are facing elimination. Hello, Marcus. How are you doing this week?
Wow, you're bringing up sports in a timed podcast. I can't believe you. Yes, I'm doing quite well. Still rocking it out here in Orange County. Looking forward to your arrival in just a mere, 3 weeks?
Right? Yeah, give or take.
You'll be using my shower and eating with my forks in 3 weeks.
Ooh, okay. Marcus, I take back that Bulls comment. I can't wait to see you. I'm rooting for him. Not. Anyways, yeah, great to be back here on another week. We have a great guest lined up. But first, you know, Marcus, we talked last week about a bad habit that I developed about having trouble reading comprehension, having issues with really concentrating on things that I've been reading and bouncing around from here to there with all these notifications. And we ended up getting a few emails back from listeners saying, "Hey, dude, you're not alone. I experienced this too," and there's actually all these studies out there that show that quite possibly the internet is making us dumber, if you can believe that, or at least it's making us rewire the way we remember things and how we think and how we're acting, and you know, with mobile devices, all these activity streams and notifications and distractions are all around us. So we had a couple listeners send us some great research and some links, and basically they said the same thing you did, which is what it came down to.
What's that? Get professional help?
Yeah, so, well, hey. Well, I don't think it went that far.
Well, you know what? I did kind of expand on that conversation that we had internally myself, and I thought about it, and I think it's because it's the internet as it's consumed is unlike the experience that you and I had growing up, which is we would take notes, like if we were watching a film strip or a movie, something like that. Everybody didn't have a screen in front of them at the time. And so everything was just kind of an in the moment, I better take notes so I don't forget. And the internet is, as it's evolved and as things go on and as you read things through news feeds and socially, it's just kind of a disposable thought that you just look at, and that's the way that it's presented to you, so that's the way your brain processes that.
You know, you make a good point in the ubiquity of internet out there, and Wi-Fi wasn't so, you know, Wi-Fi wasn't in as many places as it is now, and I think a lot of that, of what you said, you know, we went through the era of 56K modems, which, you know, if you were lucky, you got, I don't know, 4,400 or 50, which allowed you to be like 5.5K download speed. So it forced you to be slow. You couldn't, there was no notifications except for maybe IM, you know, AOL Instant Messenger, but you couldn't load all these web pages and all these different apps. It was one page at a time, and it sort of forced you to take your time. Now the internet speeds are so fast, it's like boom, boom, boom.
Yeah, so maybe I had thought about that, and maybe just having a notepad next to you rather than just a Evernote or something. Maybe take some notes on the things that you read during the day and, you know, make a notation as to the story or the author or the perspective or something like that, and you'll probably get a lot more out of it.
Either that or start, you know, take 10 minutes, 15 minutes out of your day, disconnect, and give your time to actually think about what you read. And give your time to let that settle in and do some deep thinking about the subject, because, you know, when you're going through it and you're skimming it and you don't really sit down and really, really think about it, you know, to comprehend it, I think that's part of the issue as well.
Yeah, and you've got to have a purpose, and that's so different also from that experience of what a lot of us were used to, is when you wanted to research something, you went and you found 50 books about the thing that you were trying to research. And when you do research on the internet, it's like you have to load 5 sites plus Wikipedia, and then you'll get hit with 50 other links of stuff to click on, and here, this is probably funnier, and you know, you can't even go to Twitter and look for something like that because you get totally derailed.
Right.
So the distraction wasn't there, and it's certainly prevalent now. And that's just something as content creators, bloggers, news article writers and contributors, that's something that we have to be cognizant of and adjust our reading habits accordingly.
So anyways, just thank you everybody out there who listened to last week's show, sent us some feedback. That was greatly appreciated. And with all of that, I think it's time to introduce our guest here for tonight. His name is Dan Griffiths. Now he's a former Marine. He's a WordPress plugin developer. He's also a developer for Easy Digital Downloads, a free e-commerce solution for WordPress. He's the co-founder of the Redo framework, founder of HostPress, and organizer of WordCamp Omaha. And in his spare time, just for fun, he created a website called WPTally.com, which allows people to get a total amount of downloads for their plugins and themes on the WordPress.org plugin and theme directories using the username. Pretty cool little service. So, Dan, thanks a lot for taking some time out of your schedule to be on the show tonight.
Hey, not a problem, not a problem. I want to do a quick point of clarification for three.
Yeah.
First, Marcus, when you made that comment about not having screens back in the day,
yeah,
all I could picture was an Etch-a-Sketch. So I'm picturing Jeff trying to take notes on an Etch-a-Sketch, and I'm having a really hard time not laughing over here. Also, you did pronounce it wrong. It's Redux.
Ah, doggone it.
And just to make the rest of the team happy, Tally isn't actually just my project. It was inspired by Pippin. I did the actual code work for it.
And what isn't these days?
I know! HostPress, that's mine. I did the actual code work, and Sean Davis did the theme.
Excellent. Glad we got that taken care of.
It's like a measuring stick.
We wanted to get the hate mail.
It's like a virtual measuring stick as to how big your stick is as a developer.
Well, you see, Jeff, when you get on someone's nerves, they send you hate mail. But if I get on Sean or Pippin's nerves, I got to hear from it in 10 seconds. So,
you're probably getting Slack notifications right now. You're playing Slack-a-mole.
No, I think Pippin's gone at the moment, so I should be okay for another few minutes.
So your background into technology goes way back. In fact, I think it goes back to before I was born, is when you got interested in technology. Sort of take us way back.
Well, hey, remind me that I'm old. Thank you.
Hey, Dan, you're old. So going way back to the 80s where you first got involved with technology, tell us how that came about. How did you gain this sudden interest in technology back in the day with the Tandy and the Commodore and things like that?
I really wish that I could say that, I had the type of beginning that someone like Steve Jobs or Bill Gates probably had, where it was just some sort of epiphany and pop goes the weasel or whatever. But the reality is, it wasn't anything that spectacular. It was, I was in, a society where technology was the next big thing, so everyone wanted to get in on it. And I just did what everyone else did. I tried it and realized that it made sense to me. So, that's all she wrote.
So you spent a lot of hours pouring through technical manuals. You had about two computers that you scraped together change for to purchase, which happened to be the TRS-80 and the Commodore 64, both of which I probably could never had the opportunity to mess with in these days unless I went to like a Wayback Machine or an archive building or a museum. But
just for you, Jeff, I will arrange to have a Trash 80, this TRS-80 Model 100, with me next time I run into you at a WordCamp.
Yes. Do you have the speech module that goes along with that? Can we play Parsec on it, all that stuff?
I do have the speech module. I actually have my original TRS-80 and my original Commodore 64. But I probably won't bring the speech module and the external drive and all that fun stuff when I come visit, just because, space and traveling and stuff.
Oh, yeah. Well, Dan, this will probably impress you, dude. I even owned the SX64, the portable.
Oh, awesome.
The 3.5-inch screen on it.
I consider it a point of pride, and I probably shouldn't, but I consider it a point of pride that to this day I still have an original 64 and an original VIC-20 in the original packaging.
Damn.
Okay, I feel like I'm on Old Technology Weekly here.
Hello.
I actually, Marcus, I've got one that's even better than that, and you might be the only person that I talk to in the next decade that's actually able to appreciate this. Particularly in our world that is undeniably ruled by the young. I have serial number 1 and 2 of the... and now my brain has gone blank. And I'll get back to that as soon as I remember what I was talking about.
I can always edit that error.
Oh, K-Pro 2.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I was on, there's, speaking of old computer groups, Jeff, I used to be a member of a group that was dedicated to preserving computers. And someone came on one day and asked if anyone wanted to buy these two computers. She didn't know anything about them, didn't know where they were from, what they were worth, nothing. And I shot her an email. At the time, I was running a really, really tiny little computer museum in North Carolina. And I said, look, you know, I run this little museum, and I'm interested in acquiring these from you. They look cool. I don't know a whole lot about them, but, you know, what do you want for them? And I get this email back from her, and she says, if they're going to a museum, I'll give them to you for the cost of shipping.
Ooh.
I go, well, you can't beat that deal, so I accept, pay the shipping, get these two computers from her, and start to you know, tear them apart a little bit, try to figure out what they are, where they came from, do they still work, et cetera, et cetera. And I find this plate on the back corner of it that says, you know, K-Pro 2, manufacturer date, serial number, yada, yada, yada. At the bottom it says serial number 0001 and 0002. And I started doing a little bit of research and find out that the woman that I just bought these two computers off of is the daughter of the designer for the K-Pro project.
Nice. Yeah, you've got some Smithsonian stuff on you.
Those are my babies.
Yeah, now,
and they
now,
do Jeff, still you, work.
Jeff, you might find this sort of irrelevant, but let me explain a real-world scenario as to where this kind of thing can lead to in WordPress. So in those days, what Dan's talking about, you know, even like the Commodore 64 days and all that, I was 14 years old, and going to these user group meetups that they would have before they were called meetups, and I would review software in front of an auditorium of 500 people, just like I do the plug-in picks of the week now. Same exact thing. So guys that started back then, just how you know, we're kind of starting this show off with a weird kind of go back in time twist, but that's why it leads, you know, guys like Dan, guys like me and you, Jeff, ultimately, to do what we do, is because we develop those habits early on, before any of this really took off. You had to bust your ass to get here.
And in that realm, you know, technology was the next best thing, and you sort of took a liking to it, Dan. Explain what it was like growing up, going through high school. This newfound technology, classes are starting to get computers, you started to have BBS systems, and you knew what all this was, the power, the things that it enabled. What was it like growing up with this technology and being able to sort of be the one to go to because you had the knowledge of how this stuff worked?
Well, high school, if you had that level of skill, you, for lack of a better way of putting it, were basically a god. This is a time when we didn't have even, you know, basic computer applications classes in high schools yet. The best you could hope for was a keyboarding class. And they've been doing that since, you know, early 1900s in the typewriter. So for those people who actually were involved in that industry, if you got in trouble, you could get out of trouble just as easily because the teachers knew that when their computers broke, you were the one they had to go to. So I can't count how many times I'd get a detention for something or whatever, and 5 minutes into the detention, I get called down to the principal's office because the principal's computer broke. it was easier to come to us than go to the district.
Oh, man. In a way, I wouldn't mind kind of going back to that world.
Tell me about it.
So you gained a substantial knowledge on how to use this technology. You for whatever reason, it was very interesting to read technical manuals. I don't want you to admit to anything here that you did with the technology, but I know reading your really great essay on HostPress that was published last Wednesday, you mentioned that the lines between what was legal and illegal with computers started to blur. And did you participate in each side? Did you know what you were doing when you were doing it back then?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's admittedly some things that we did back then where it was you learned as you went. And like I said in that essay, the rules weren't clearly defined yet. Some people may be familiar with U.S. Code 1030 Section 18, which is the law that regulates computer fraud and abuse. That had just been passed. You know, that was the mid-80s when the whole internet revolution, not really internet revolution, but computer revolution. You know, changed the entire ecosphere, basically. So there were rules. Obviously, if I'm stealing something, I'm stealing something. But at the same time, you know, what the penalties were for those rules and whether or not you would be prosecuted for certain things was still kind of up in the air.
Yeah, and I almost wonder, was the beginning of the movie Hacker sort of about that specific act?
I'm not even going to get into Hackers.
No.
Don't get me wrong. I do love Angelina Jolie and a lot of her work. But that said, that is the most ridiculous movie on cybercrime ever written.
But it's still very entertaining to watch.
Oh, it's an entertaining movie, but it's not about our culture. You want to watch something about our culture, go back and watch War Games. That's a little bit closer.
Oh, yeah. Oh, another classic. A great movie.
And look at what you got Look at today. You've got stupid CSI shows and cop shows that are like, okay, tune into the frequency of his mouse and like unbelievable feats of technology. You know,
I don't remember what it is, but there's actually a website out there that cataloged every technical mistake made in CSI, and it's hilarious.
Hmm.
So after high school, you decide to go into the Marines, and what was your main motivation for making that choice?
Do you remember a few minutes ago when you said you didn't want me to incriminate myself? I played the fifth.
All right. But obviously you were part of the Marine Corps for a while.
It's Corps, not Corps.
Corps.
I know a significant number of us end up on a slab at some point in time, but that doesn't mean that the Corps is built on the premise of death.
But the interesting thing I see, and I don't know if it's just part of the culture at the time, but when you got out of the military, you had a hard time. You had a hard time finding jobs, and even with your knowledge of technology, what was it? Just the culture? I mean, it just seems kind of strange. I know it was probably a different time back in the day, but it just seems strange to me.
Again, with the making me feel old. No, we're a product of the time, basically. I got out of the military at exactly the wrong moment. If it had been, you know, 10 years earlier or 5 years later, it probably wouldn't have been as big a deal. If it was today, I probably would have been fine. But when I got out, people still very much had the mindset that if you don't have that wonderful little piece of magic paper from a college, you're not worth hiring. So I couldn't get into the technical fields because I didn't have a college degree. I opted out of college. And anything that wasn't technical, anything that I generally could have gotten a job for without a degree, was just paranoid about hiring someone who'd just been discharged from the military after several tours overseas.
Mm-hmm. So one of the things you went back towards, the one thing you know, which is technology, and how did you end up discovering easy digital downloads and therefore Pippin Williamson?
That's an entertaining story. I actually found WordPress before I found EDD. I was still in the military when I started using WordPress for myself. And when I got out of the military, I discovered that I was having difficulties finding a job and having difficulties, you know, putting a roof over my head in a very literal sense. I started doing just contract work with WordPress and didn't know what I was doing to save my life, but knew. Okay.
Here we go.
I apologize. I'm tethering at the moment, so bear with me.
No problem.
Where was I? So I had this client who wanted to build a site that sold digital products. And my research led me to EDD. And the client ended up not actually going that route and actually not using WordPress at all. But the code quality that I saw in EDD was enough to catch my attention. So I started exploring it and playing with it and found an open ticket that Pippin had posted regarding an interest in having an API for EDD. And I sat down one day and decided to write an API.
Have you done that before? Have you done
it? I had never done that before.
Really?
I've done a lot now.
You're like, I'm doing this.
Well, point of clarification, I had done API work, but only on the use side, not on the creation right. side.
Okay.
So I understood APIs, I understood how they worked, what was necessary, but not in the context of building one from the ground up. That was a new thing. But it was a challenge, and some of us thrive on challenge.
Yeah, instead of being challenged, I don't know very many people that just say, hey, I'm going to sit down, I'm going to create an API, even though I've never done it before, and then just do it.
Well, you know what it is, Jeff? I think it's and Dan, you confirm with me if this is true or not. It's because we grew up with these crappy computers, and we not only know how things work in today's terms, but we know why they work because of the slowness of it and the fact that we had to mod the crap out of stuff. So that's what probably made you like, I can do this, you know?
I don't remember, Marcus, and you could actually confirm or deny this one, but I don't remember if I mentioned it in the essay that I did for last week's HeroPress, but it's very much in the early days of the internet, we had this split in the culture where you had those of us who were insistent on knowing not just that I could make the computer do something, but why. And then there was the people that just took that work and ran with it. And even, not to reference hackers again, Jeff, but even in hackers, that concept was mentioned where you have the people that were the true quote-unquote hackers and then the script kiddies that just took our knowledge and played with it and got in trouble, you know?
No, that makes perfect sense. It's the fact that you know the architecture behind it. You know, you're not just building, stacking the bricks.
It's not a question of can I do it? It's a question of not only can I do it, but why should I do it, and why does it work when I do it?
Cool. So what happened once you started making the API?
I got a message from Pippin, and he said, do you want a job? And I went, yeah.
Perfect timing, too, huh?
Yeah, it was great timing, and it's been a great ride. I mean, it's been, what, almost 2 years now?
So
more than 2 years. Shoot, I don't even know.
So you're struggling, and you're actually having to work from libraries because they have internet and computers, and you discover you have this opportunity with EDD, you find a ticket, you write an API, and that sort of opens the door for you, for Pippin to see your work, and then he offers you a job. And then what other opportunities, what other doors have opened for you since that time period, since Pippin offered you a job and you had that initial opportunity to work with EDD?
Oh, I mean, since then, how many? I've got, what, 50 plugins out there right now? and new ones coming all the time. So obviously I got something out of the exchange, you know. I'm still an active member of the EDD team and very, very proud of that. Redux obviously was a huge, huge thing for me. And while I'm giving other people credit, I should mention that, yes, I founded Redux, but I kind of handed it over to my friend Dovey, who's now leading that project.
Mm-hmm. And throughout all of that, you've also been able to attend WordCamps and meet a bunch of people in the WordPress community face-to-face, right?
Well, for the people that have run into me at a WordCamp and asked me where I'm from, I generally respond, I'm wherever WordCamp is. I just got back from a WordCamp, or not a WordCamp, but a conference. I just got back from LoopConf, and we got, Miami coming up, we got Kansas City coming up, we got OC coming up. We never sit still.
Are you going to be in the OC?
It's questionable. All of the ones that I just mentioned, I have a ticket to. The question is, am I going to actually take the time to show up? I don't know.
Jeff and I are both going to be at OC.
Yeah, I got that from the whole staying in your showering in your place. And what I thought you said, eating your forks. I got very confused for a minute.
Oh, with the forks, yeah. But no, that'd be fun. That OC one's always a pretty cool one because there's a lot of stuff to do.
I've never actually made it to OC yet, and it's either this year or next year is going to be when I finally make it out to that one.
Yeah, you still get the same kind of star power that you do at the San Francisco one, but it's just a lot more laid back and not as crowded.
In my experience, Marcus, star power is relative. Every WordCamp that I go to, you run into someone that's awesome and someone that knows more than you do.
Yeah, no, that's what I mean. I mean, it's like you got Chris Lemma that comes, you got Steve Zengate, you got all the people that are on that WP water cooler weekly thing that they do, and I think it's become like as hip as the Miami one, you know, as far as prominence, because it sells out in a day.
I don't think they have Miami's numbers yet, though, do they?
Well, in relative terms, I mean, it is a smaller community, but I think pound for pound, it's pretty well represented.
That's fair.
So I want to talk about a project that you founded. It you started back on May 5th. It's called HostPress, and you've launched a crowdfunding campaign.
I did not start that on May 5th. I started that on December 14th of last year.
Well, that's when you started developing it, right?
That's when I started developing it and talking about it and trying to actually, find people who might be interested in supporting it or investing in it. But I actually started the crowdfunding campaign for it, 2 weeks ago, a week ago? Yeah,
probably on May 5th or somewhere around there.
I guess I could look it up. I have the tab open.
Well, it's been about 10 days, so... So maybe May 3rd. Okay, well, that makes sense. But so the funding campaign is for $175,000. Explain to me what HostPress is and what motivated you to create the product.
What motivated me to create the product? That could be a talk in and of itself.
Well, luckily you're here.
But I'm on a timetable this time around. and just ask Jeff, I could talk all night. So a big part of where the idea came from was actually, Jeff, you're familiar, or at least to some extent, I believe, with the work that my company has been doing with creating standalone desktop applications built on WordPress.
Right.
Marcus, you probably aren't, so a little bit of background on that.
Okay.
For you, I assume that you pay attention to the state of the WordPress.
I was there, yeah.
Yep. So was I. So 2 years ago, a reference was made and then reiterated this year that WordPress is the future of web application development. It's no longer a blog or a content management system. It's a framework for building just about anything online. And we're seeing, proof of that every day. People are coming up with new projects that don't even look like WordPress but are completely built on WordPress. One of my favorite examples is a theme, I believe it is, called Pickle, which I'm sure you guys have heard of.
Mm-hmm. Right, a project by Jason Schuler.
Yep, which if you look at the back end of it, does not look at all like WordPress, but it is completely WordPress. So that actually got me thinking, and my thought process was, why stop at web apps? Let's take it outside of the web space. Let's try to find a way to use WordPress to do rapid desktop development. And we succeeded. We actually are using technology now that allows us to use WordPress as the back end or the backbone for standalone desktop apps that don't require internet connection or a web server or anything else, but they're still built completely on WordPress. Which then got me thinking, well, how far can we take this? Thanks to Nick V asking me in San Francisco last year, how far can you take the technology? And that spawned several other projects, one of which was HostPress. Now, why a control panel? Because cPanel and Plesk kind of suck.
Yeah, it does.
And for those who don't know, Plesk and cPanel is pretty much, it's not the WordPress dashboard, it's actually the server software that controls your actual hosting account. Like, that's where you can add subdomains, MySQL databases, things of that nature. And over the years, there really hasn't been a lot done to improve the user experience and the user interface. So yeah, I mean, I could see where something like HostPress, a third competitor in this space, could make some inroads towards that market. And you actually shared some big numbers. I mean, it's between Plesk and cPanel, it's like an $82 million. $82 million is spent a year just on control panel licenses.
I don't remember what the number was, but yeah, it was several billion dollars a year.
Several billion.
And that's just based off of the public numbers that we've been able to actually find on in how many licenses of each have been privately sold, which doesn't even, I don't believe, cover companies like GoDaddy and the other major hosting companies that have these massive accounts with them. I believe those numbers are purely the private sales.
Huh, okay. So what do you, have you talked to certain web hosting companies? Is there a demand for this, or do they have, are they interested in seeing that's better than cPanel?
I've talked to a bunch of them. Most of the companies that I talked to was last year, December, January timeframe. And the general consensus is they're all super interested in seeing a competitor for Plesk and cPanel. No one is content with those two products. They're too inflexible. They're too bulky. cPanel particular looks like it was made in the early 90s, and it kind of was made in the early 90s. So yeah, there's definitely interest in it. The big challenge that I'm currently facing is that no one wants to take a chance on it. Because there have been, in the last decade, probably 30 or 40 major projects that have been launched to try to create a new control panel, and they've all failed catastrophically for one of two reasons. Either it's a network architect trying to create a control panel in which they understand, you know, the architecture behind the control panel but aren't really a super talented developer, so the interface is clunky and not user-friendly, or the other side where you have a developer who manages to piece together a beautiful product and just doesn't have the knowledge to make everything behind the scenes work really well. So, I mean, I understand why there is a little bit of trepidation in terms of trying to support a project like this.
And Marcus and I were talking about this the other week. You're asking for $175,000. What would you spend that money on? What would that money go towards?
A significant amount of that is going to go towards hiring a network engineer. Because while my background really is in operating system level work, I'm a Linux developer by trade before WordPress, before any of this. But, you know, I can make it work, but I can't make it work well. So I need to have someone on my team who has the ability to help me with the low-level, you know, Apache and Nginx and MySQL and Postgres and whatever configuration necessary to make this actually run well.
Yeah, I've what would you say to the criticism that this is an example of something that is being WordPressified, and they look at all the security releases and updates surrounding WordPress and the type of server-level privileges it needs and things of that nature and say, this is just a bad idea on paper to use WordPress to manage servers at that level?
I say that the thing that they're looking at as a bad idea is exactly why it's a good idea. Yeah, it's going to have security problems. So does cPanel, so does Plesk. I could pick any cPanel or Plesk instance right now and probably break into it in 5 or 10 minutes. But rather than having to put the time and money into finding and fixing all of those security vulnerabilities myself, I can take 50% of the load off by letting the core team do it for me. All I have to worry about security vulnerabilities in beyond what's reported, which we can then feedback upstream and get fixed in WordPress core, is anything that we introduce in our interface outside of the WordPress core architecture.
Well, it's a noble idea, and I wish you the best of luck with it. And I would hope that if web hosting companies to me seem like they have pretty big pockets. So if they're really interested in having something that's easier to use for their clients than cPanel or Plesk, and maybe it becomes more affordable. They should plunk down the cash and take a chance. You know, it doesn't have to be $25,000 chance. It could be, you know, $5,000 chance. But it would be nice to see, just to me, from an outsider looking in, I think that would help validate the idea to get them to go all in with you, or at least partially in.
I think just in licensing fees, reduced by switching that mechanism which you use in cPanel, wouldn't that be a cost benefit to a lot of these bigger hosts?
I would like to think so. Like I indicated in the actual campaign, this is intended to be a predominantly open source product. We're going to release the core of it as open source. We want the community to get involved. We want people to, you know, contribute back to it. So, yeah, the licensing fees are basically going to go away. The only thing that you're going to have to pay for is potentially third-party extensions if you need extensions beyond the core functionality of the product, and then any support. I'm not building this to be a cash cow. I'm building this to give cPanel and Plesk a run for their money.
I wonder, with it being open source, if that's why a lot of web hosters or a lot of people are saying, it's going to be out there, it's going to be open source, I'll wait and see, and maybe see how other people use it or test it or use it, and then maybe then they'll invest it or give it a shot. I wonder if that's sort of holding them back.
That's fine. They're more than welcome to hold back. Like I said in the campaign, it's going to go forward with or without the funding. It's just going to take 10 times as long without it.
All right. Well, like I said, it's a noble cause, and best of luck to you. You're a pretty smart guy, a pretty smart developer. I wanted to get your take on your thoughts on WordPress development these days. We've talked a lot about the future of WordPress, and one of the things we talk about pretty often on this show, because we have no other choice, is this thing called the REST API. Since you just, like we talked about earlier, you just whipped up an API for fun, apparently, or because it was needed, what are your thoughts on, A, WordPress's future, and B, how influential it's going to be once that REST API is added to core?
My first thought on the REST API is I really, really, really wish they'd waited 2 weeks before they announced it. I had actually started writing one of my own.
Well, there you go.
They announced theirs 2 weeks before I was going to announce mine. And I can't compete with the core team. That said, I think it's a great idea. I think it's something that's, while not necessarily mandatory, certainly beneficial in our environment, in our culture. It will make writing things like mobile applications or standalone applications that tie back into a company's website infinitely simpler, not to mention projects like Pickle or like the work that I'm doing right now, where we're completely re-implementing WordPress and just using the core functionality with a whole new interface. You know, it'll make all of that type of work infinitely simpler. I think it's a great idea, and I'm excited to see where it goes.
So we're probably, with that REST API, we're going to run into a situation where there's not just one admin dashboard or backend, but there could be many. There could be hundreds. There could be thousands, all because it's just whatever you want to make up with that API or whatever admin backend interface you want to create that's tailored specifically to a product. I guess it's going to be quite possible with that REST API.
Oh, it already is, even without the REST API. Like I keep going back to, Pickle. you know, it's a great example of an admin interface for WordPress. That
and Happy Tables, I think, is another
example. Yeah, Happy Tables is a great example. But, I mean, if you think about it, Jeff, how many WordPress sites do you work with on a fairly regular basis?
One.
And I would wager that you log into WP Tavern at least once a day, right?
I try not to, but it sometimes
I know. It's impossible to avoid work. I've been trying to do it my entire life. How many times have you ever clicked on the little link on the sidebar that says media?
Not very often.
How many times have you clicked on the link that says tools?
Not very often.
There is a lot to WordPress that is wonderful when you need it, but just annoyingly in the way when you don't. So having the ability to, like, you know, people like you and me, we use WordPress on a fairly regular basis, and if not a daily basis. And, you know, to us, those things are just kind of a fact of life. They're just there. If we don't need it at the moment, we ignore it. But if you're working with a client, if you're working with a business owner who doesn't know WordPress from a hole in the wall, how do you simplify the dashboard to such an extent that they can comfortably use it without messing up all of your work? And that's where I think the beauty of the API comes in. You know, the ability for us to take WordPress and give the end user an interface that is completely customized to them and simplified such that a non-technical, non-developer, non-WordPress user type person can comfortably work with it without potentially damaging the actual website.
And I'll give you a real world example of that going on in my world right now. Is a site for a client I'm working with does veterinary products, and they want their warehouse to be able to print out or just look at fulfillment as far as auto ship products that are going out that day. Vitamins for their dogs, right? I have to build a complete WordPress crazy back end so that they don't do anything except see what orders are going out.
If you feel like farming that out, just give me a call.
Okay.
That's my specialty.
Okay. Well, but that rings totally true. And imagine is if you are a developer and you're doing client work, once the REST API comes around and we have all of this kind of functionality, then you're making a product for these clients. You're making something that interacts with mobile. You're making something that interacts with their back end in their office, probably their sales reps, you know, with a P2 environment or something. So it's pretty huge the way that you've explained it.
Yeah, you know, what's that rule of thumb for software development? Is it 80-20, where 80% is stuff you use and on an everyday basis, and 20% is just stuff that you could do without? I think the REST API will allow us to change that to like 95-5 or something, or close to 100%.
It is. I believe the general rule of thumb is that it is 80-20, but the reality is, for your average end user, it's probably the other way around. I mean, if you think about it, your average site owner, what do they need to do with the website? They need to log in. They need to be able to create a new blog post. They need to be able to maybe create a new user. But by and large, once the site's live, they shouldn't really be touching anything. They shouldn't have to go in and rework content, rework pages more than, you know, maybe once a year if they change their pricing model or something ridiculous like that. You know, they shouldn't ever have to go in and do anything in the settings menu or anything in the tools menu or the media menu or of links. Why is there a links menu? Who has a blog role in today? You know, in this day and age, who really has a traditional blog role anymore? And yet it's still there. You know, there's just so much to I don't want to single WordPress out because we're far from the only people that do this, but, you know, why do we still have this dependence on, you know, 20 different menu items when your average user needs two?
So you're telling me you don't use Meta as your widget?
Only when I'm building a site and haven't added anything to the sidebar yet.
Yeah, it's a great conversation, and you know, like only adding menu items that you need. You know, you have a website development firm. It's called Section 214.
You even said it right.
What?
Everyone says 214, and it drives me nuts.
It's section 214. Is that still an active? Is this still an active yep. development, or
it is
still taking on projects?
Always.
So for anyone out there who is interested in hiring Dan, who is an insanely smart individual, it's section214.com.
I should make a little bit of a caveat on that. We will take projects from just about anybody, but we don't do design work.
Gotcha.
So if you come to us and say we already have a design, can you build a website around it? Then we'll probably be okay with that. But if you come to us and say we need a website designed from the ground up, we're going to look at you and go, and.
I like the tagline on the website. It's infinite possibilities. What does that mean to you? How did you come up with that?
I came up with that because from day one, we started out not doing things the traditional way. We started out, like, there's so many agencies out there today that specialize in building websites or specialize in writing plugins or, you know, whatever. And we started out with the mindset of how far can we push technology? What can we come up with that's truly innovative? And Redux was a big part of that. You know, at the beginning, that was one of the first things that was launched under the Section 214 umbrella. And the whole premise behind it was there's, you know, theme settings panels were a dime a dozen. There was probably 30 or 40 of them out there that had significant traction, but there wasn't anything out there that supported plugins. And we wanted to create something completely new. We wanted to create a product that would work just as seamlessly with plugins as it did for themes, and we succeeded. So, you know, and that's kind of been our trend from day one. You know, me writing an API for EDD is the first ever, I believe, e-commerce specific API for a plugin product. Taking on projects like HostPress or like using WordPress for desktop development, it's things that you just don't hear about, and we're trying to be innovative, to stay on the front of technology.
Have you, by any chance, like looked at other industries, the medical industry, or you know, warehousing, fulfillment, things like that, and seen different applications that those environments might require, and how WordPress might be used for stuff like that?
Sure, but I have a rule: I don't look for clients; I let them find me.
Okay.
Well, all right, we've taken care of that. So,
how do they find you?
Honestly, word of mouth is generally how I get most of my work, is people talk and I get referrals.
Do you get a lot of referrals through your work at EDD?
A shocking number. I got, I believe, 4 today alone.
Great, that's awesome. That means that's continuous stream of income and work, and that's what you need.
Well, I don't take as many of them as I'd like. Generally because people come to me with ridiculous requests. Right. Like my all-time favorite, can you reproduce Facebook for $500 in a week?
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah.
Which happens at least once a year.
Well, there's a plugin for that. Probably not.
I'll review it when it comes up.
Yeah. So Dan, you, as a military veteran yourself, I wanted to get your take and your opinion on what James Dahlman is doing. We had him on the show
a few months ago
with Happy Joe, where he's actually using WordPress and technology to aid in providing this type of education to military veterans. And then, if all goes well, sort of giving them job placement to established WordPress development companies. You like what's going on over there?
I absolutely love it. In fact, I love it to the point that when I first heard about it, which was shortly after James announced it, I actually ended up getting in touch with James, and he brought me on board as a local trainer here in Omaha. So whenever we do actually get a boot camp here in Omaha, I'm going to be one of the people that's handling the training and placement aspect for him. Also, my company locally, while we are a distributed company, we do maintain offices in Omaha, Nebraska. And we have a standing policy that if any veteran comes through the door, regardless of their skill level, we will hire them on the spot.
Wow. Wow, that is a hell of a policy. I've never heard of that before.
I've only ever heard of one other company doing it, and it's literally because of what I went through to get to where I am today and having to build up from nothing with zero support from anybody. And I can't stand the fact that that's what our vets go through, because we deserve better. So my policy is, even if I'm hiring you to be a janitor, you will have a place in my company, and I will train you to get to the point where you can be self-sufficient.
Man, that is awesome.
Move to Omaha.
Yeah. I would not recommend moving here just for that. It is not. We are in the middle of nowhere. Man, if you're already here, yeah, come find me. I'll be more than happy to work with you.
And Happy Joe actually helped you out. No need to go into the specifics. You were in need of some financial aid, and Happy Joe, you know, James saw that, and he said, you know, hey, let me help you out. And he got the ball rolling. He sort of put the word out there to the WordPress community, and whatever it is you're asking for financially, the WordPress community said, no, that's not going to work. We're going to give you double that or something.
That's actually one of my all-time favorite stories, even though I hate the fact that it happened. It's really, really changed my opinion of the WordPress community. Long story short, we had a medical emergency in the family that took more money than we had. And if memory serves, Jeff, James wasn't the only one involved in that. I seem to remember talking to you at the time as well.
Yes.
So don't act like you have nothing to do with it. But yeah, I literally turned to the community and said, look, you know, I mean, at the time I didn't even consider myself to be a super influential or important or active even member of the community. And I said, look, you know, I need a little bit of help. Can you guys help me out? And the number of responses and not just the responses, but the things that people said was so incredible. I mean, I had people that are really, really, really well-known names in the community that are super famous people that I didn't know from Adam that said things.
No, you cut out there a little bit. You said
you didn't know these people from Adam, and then read stories that.
Yeah, I had one person who sent me an email along with their contribution that said, "I just wanted to let you know that every time I see a plugin of yours come through, I have to read the code because every single one of them teaches me something." And this is someone who's been around the community much, much longer than I have, and in my mind anyway, is more influential to the community. So that kind of a response just blew me away. And then, yeah, like you said, Jeff, I actually got the funding happened so quickly that I had to actually stop the campaign. I started the campaign, went to grab something to eat, and I was gonna grab a quick snack and then go to bed. And in the time it took me to walk to the kitchen and back again, we had raised twice the amount that I've been looking for. And I went, holy crap, if I'd gone to bed without looking at this, I would have woken up in the morning and been a millionaire. So, yeah, I mean, we have a great community. I love it.
And it's not just the money at that moment either. I mean, it's great to have the money, but it's the stress, right? It's the stress that goes along with that burden and knowing, can you code your way out of it? Can you develop your way out of it? Do I got to take 6 clients to get my way out of this? You know?
Ask Jeff. Ask James. I tried. I actually, I spent 4 or 5 hours trying to find, like, I was like, I just need one good client, and I could not do it at the time.
Yeah, I remember that. You were putting out there, I need work. If anybody needs some work done or needs me on a project, I retweeted it. Everybody, I saw a lot of other people retweeting you, and then, I recognize you tried to go down every avenue to try not to do the crowdfunding approach, which is...
Yeah, James suggested that from the second that I actually contacted him. I actually contacted James to see if he had work for me, and he said, you should crowdfund it. I said, no! Well, that ended up being the way we had to go, but...
Yeah, and I can only imagine we've had other people that have had the WordPress community show their generosity towards, and it's
like my friend Mark.
Yes, like your friend Mark, where you're going through this turmoil of oh my God, what am I gonna do? I need this money, and you're going through the stress and everything else, and then to just all of a sudden within an hour, have more than you need and see double the amount of what you need from people you've never met. Maybe they only know you through your code or through your contributions. I mean, wow, what an emotional roller coaster that had to be.
I've been in the time that I've been in this community, I've yet to come across a situation where I had a truly negative response to anything. My real introduction to the WordPress community, like I'd been involved in contributing and writing code and whatever for a while, but the first ever WordCamp that I went to, someone that had never met me before walked up to me and said, "I just wanted to let you know that because of you, I'm getting married next week."
You gotta tell me the circumstances.
They stopped one of your girlfriends. What happened?
That was my reaction. I'm sitting here going, "Excuse me? What? Say that again?" And this guy goes, "Yeah." He said, "I just want to let you know, I've been using Redux Framework pretty much since the day you launched it, and it saved me so much time and money that I'm now able to get married." And I went, "Oh, whoa!" You know. And it's kind of been like that since day one. Awesome. So
what would you say out there if we had a listener that was, maybe this is their first episode, or maybe they're relatively new to the WordPress community, they haven't been to a WordCamp, they don't know a lot of people, they're looking at them as if they're rock stars in the community, what would you tell them out there?
Don't wait. Just jump in. And that doesn't mean that, you know, being involved in the community means that you're not going to see people as rock stars. I mean, I remember the first time that I met, you know, Mark Jackwith or Andrew Nason or any of the people that are the upper echelon of WordPress, so to speak. And it never really stops being intimidating the first time you meet someone that you look up to. But that said, they're still people. And for the most part, they're great people. And our community is, of all the communities that I've been involved in my life, probably the one that is the most fostering and will definitely catch you.
Yeah, my rule in the WordPress community is, you know, rock star or not, they're just as dorky and as weird as I am. So
everyone puts their bow tie on the same way? Is that what I just heard?
Pretty much, yeah.
So before we wrap it up here, are there any cool projects you're working on, plugins, EDD stuff, anything you could tell us about before we wrap it up here?
I would love to say that everything I work on is cool. I don't know. I don't really have a whole lot going on in terms of new EDD stuff coming out. We did just release version 3 of PDF Stamper, which is one of my better selling products for EDD and one of the ones I'm most proud of. And it's a huge, huge, huge change for not just how we do PDF management in WordPress, but a huge change for the concept of watermarking or manipulating PDFs generally in WordPress. So that's something I'm super proud of.
So you're talking about outputting PDFs within modules within WordPress?
Well, in terms of the EDD extension or in terms of general?
The work that you're proud of by doing.
Well, I'm proud of it because it's a very, very well put together product that sells very well and has minimal issues. I mean, anything that you write is going to have people that have problems with it. But by and large, we don't get a whole lot of support requests for it. What we get is feature requests, and they're almost always filled. But the reason that I'm proud of it at this point is because traditional PDF management in WordPress, we historically have used FPDF or TFPDF or MPDF or one of the other PDF manipulation libraries that's available for PHP. Mm-hmm. They all suffer from this one huge flaw, which is they don't actually manipulate the PDF. What they do is they take a screenshot of the current page and overlay your changes on it, which doesn't really seem like a huge deal, except you lose the ability to work with form fields and bookmarks and annotations and stuff like that. It all gets stripped. PDF Stamper 3 is using a new library that we've discovered and worked out a deal with the author of that allows us to manipulate a PDF natively. So instead of creating a new PDF based off of the original, you know, template, we can actually directly edit a PDF on the fly, allowing us to work with form fields instead of replacing them or add, edit, remove whatever annotations, bookmarks, anything you can do in, you know, Acrobat, we can do on the fly through PHP. So it's kind of a cool project to work on. It took us a good 6 or 8 months to actually complete this stupid project because of the licensing issues, but it was well worth it and has definitely been beneficial to our community and hopefully to the WordPress community as a whole.
Sounds awesome. I mean, so with the watermark, you're talking about like you could create crazy invoices on the fly or...
Well, it was originally created for EDD for people that wanted to be able to deliver products that were stamped with, you know, the purchaser's name and a license sure. number or whatever. So it was originally created with a very, very simple goal in mind. It was you are gonna add one watermark to a PDF that denotes, you know, purchase information of some sort.
Right.
And it's gotten to the point now, our latest version, V3, has the ability to write an infinite number of watermarks or edits to a PDF, has native ability to support TrueType fonts. We actually wrote a full-scale font manager for it. So you can use whatever font you want. You can use images. It's got support for, you know, opacity and all that normal stuff. But we've gotten, you know, since the launch of that, we're looking at the ability to not just watermark a PDF, but to actually create full-scale certificates on the fly where, you know, you could literally start with a blank certificate and have it dynamically fill in all of the information from, say, a course that you completed, your name, date of completion, everything dynamically. So it's drastically increased the marketability and the usability of the product.
Awesome.
And, folks, that's why Dan is awesome. That right there.
Oh, that's nothing.
No,
it's stuff coming.
Okay. So you got better stuff in the pipeline, but so how can people keep tabs on you, follow you on Twitter, following you on your blog, whatever it is you're doing?
You can go to section214.com. We have a blog that we run on there that unfortunately hasn't been getting the love it deserves right now. I'm working on it. You can follow my personal homepage. It's not going to exist for much longer. It's getting redesigned shortly, and it's going to basically be a landing page, but it's ghost1227.com. Or you can follow me on Twitter. The Twitter handle is ghost1227.
Which, by the way, I did enjoy when you started writing some more blog posts on your personal site, so sad to see it's going to kind of go away.
No, it's not. What's happening
is... redesign.
He's right and he's wrong. The site as it stands is going away. It is going to be a landing page that basically has my personal portfolio and then a link to the Section 214 site. And all of my blogging is going to happen on the company site from now on.
Ah, okay.
So I'm still going to be writing hopefully more regularly than I have in the past. It's just gotten to the point where I was struggling to differentiate between what goes on my site and what goes on the company site. And I came to the realization that 99% of what I'm writing is IT related, so it really belongs on the company site, which meant there's not enough content to justify two completely independent blogs.
I gotcha. Been there, done that. Dan, thanks again for being on the show, telling us about your awesome story. And for anyone interested, we'll have a link to it in the show notes, but there's a great essay you wrote. It's on HeroPress.com called Infinite Possibilities. I highly encourage all of our listeners out there to read it. And enjoy your work, and I can't wait to see it at the next WordCamp.
Yep, always.
And with that, Marcus, let's go into the news of the week. I just want to talk about one news story here. I want to give everyone an update as to what's going on with WordPress 4.3 now that we've already had about 2 weeks worth of time to enjoy WordPress 4.2, but it looks like 4.3 is going to focus on the mobile experience, the admin user interface, better passwords, and improvements to the customizer. So looking forward to that. In terms of better passwords, you know, we discussed, I don't think it was 4.2, it might have been 4.1, where the super duper password strength meter was added to... it was added in 3.7. God, time flies. But the password strength meter. So now they're going to talk. Now Mark Jackwith is going to spearhead an effort to add more feedback, such as saying like the pastor's too short or add more characters. They're not going to, at least from what I'm reading, they're not going to enforce that a strong password be used. Instead, they're going to try to do everything they can outside of that to encourage the user to create a stronger password beforehand without making that a requirement. So they're going to work on that. Of course, different UI changes, specifically with the as it relates to the experience on narrow screens, so the iPhone or just mobile devices like that, and the responsive list tables. So there's all kinds of cool little neat things, pretty much tidying up some experiences and some UI elements for WordPress 4.3. And as we get more into it, as we get another month or two into the development of 4.3, we'll have be able to tell you more information about what's going on. So with all that said, Marcus, why don't you give us your plugin picks of the week?
You got it. Well, what good developer doesn't like a little rollback? And this plugin is called WP Rollback. You covered it on the Tavern as well.
And it's not developed by Walmart.
No. I'm wondering. It is a way to roll back any kind of theme or plugin straight from WordPress.org, so it's got to be a .org thing, without any real craziness or anything like that. It works just like the updater, except you can just roll back to specific versions. Now, unless you have a darn good reason to roll back, you don't need to. But if you have to get something to work, perhaps you got some client issue and they updated and something doesn't work anymore and you've got to go backwards. Well, this is a nice way to do it. So it's called WP Rollback.
And I think this is a big deal because this is one of the first rollback type plugins I've seen that allows you to roll back a version without requiring Git, this thing called Git, which is version control, having to be installed on the server. VersionPress, Gitium, Revisor, those plugins actually need the Git module installed on the server. So, which enables version control inside of WordPress so you can revert back to an earlier stage of the site. This one actually just uses core functionality. It lets you see previous versions of the theme or the plugin, installs it, and it works great so far. But like you said, in most cases, rolling back is a no-no. Generally, there should be no reason to roll back, but it's there in case you need it. You know, in case you run into a white screen or you want to roll back to a version that has a specific feature. You know, we're not encouraging that, but it's there if you need to do it.
Absolutely. Next one, Jeff, I brought this to light because it's so few and far between that LinkedIn has any good integration with WordPress. Hardly any. This plugin is called LinkedIn OAuth. And it allows your users to log in and register to your site using their LinkedIn account using different short codes. Now, I came across this because one of these LinkedIn groups that I run, it's got about 18,000 people, and the conversation has just turned to Spamville. So I need to get them into a site so that I can monitor who's coming from where and all that stuff. So I found this, and so far so good. I haven't really unleashed the torrent of thousands of people yet, but I'm going to give it a shot. So it's called LinkedIn OAuth.
You know how I know LinkedIn is still around? When I get an email out of the blue that says, so-and-so has invited you to join their LinkedIn relationship or LinkedIn network, I go, oh, okay, I'm not even on that site, so thank you, but no thank you.
And then finally, we just talked about strong passwords, and this is a plugin created by Frankie Jarrett, friend of the show. It's called Strong Password Generator. It encourages the use of strong passwords by helping users generate them right there on the site. So kudos to Frankie Jarrett for kind of seeing the need of a nice password generator, and it's called Strong Password Generator. Check it out.
Well, depending on all the changes and enhancements that may go into 4.3 surrounding passwords, that may be a plugin that you will no longer need anymore because maybe it'll all be handled by core in 4.3.
Well, don't rain on his parade just yet.
we'll have to
see. Those are my plugin picks of the week.
Awesome. So as far as announcements go, we're going to leave next Wednesday open because I want to talk about some news, some topics, get people up to speed on some things that are going on in the WordPress community. And then the week after that, Marcus and I, it's pretty much been confirmed, so I'm rolling with it, but you and I are going to do a special show way earlier in the day. In fact, it's going to be held at, I think, 4 p.m. Eastern time, which would be 1 p.m. Mm-hmm. your time.
Yeah.
And our special guest is going to be Matt Mulliweg, which is long time overdue for him to be on the show. But it's going to be extra special because it will be the same day, May 27th, which is on a Wednesday, WordPress will turn 12. And he will be joining us from Dublin, Ireland. So, man, I'm just looking forward to that show. I mean, how cool is that to have one of the co-creators of WordPress on WordPress Weekly on the same day as WordPress's birthday? It's like the stars aligned.
It is. And if you guys out there want us to ask Matt a question, if you ever wanted to ask Matt something, tweet us or leave a comment in the the show. And I don't care. I'll ask him.
You're not afraid. We already know you're ready to ask certain questions that just, you know.
Shocking.
Triple J, Buddy Press. But anyways, yeah, I'll never forget that question. That was awesome. But what was even better was.
See, I need a moment. I need a moment to top that. I need to break that moment.
And
it was the Matt question when he asked.
We will have that moment.
Come on, people, give me some stuff.
In 2 weeks, you will have that opportunity.
Right.
So that's about it. That's going to do it for this week's show. So you can follow me on Twitter at Jeffro. It's JEFFR0. You can find show notes for this episode on WPTavern.com. And Marcus?
Find me at my website, MarcusCouch.com, and also on Twitter at MarcusCouch.
Awesome. So until next Wednesday evening, everybody enjoy the rest of your weekend and have a safe weekend.